I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, this is Merritt Larwood.
Hello, my name's Merritt Larwood. We're two guys sitting in a room. That's two guys sitting in a room talking about some films.
Yeah, we're going to talk about films for approximately half an hour, shall we say? Who knows? Who knows? Let's just see what happens. We have seen films at the... Well, cinema. It's been a bit slim pickings, hasn't it?
I went to see a film which was released on iTunes at the same time as the cinema, so I just sat
simultaneous
it.
Releasing. Is this Joe? Because it was released on Blinkbox as well at the same time.
Yeah, I watched it on iTunes for where it's priced at £5 or £6.99.
That seems quite a lot to watch it on your home screen.
But the seats were great.
Oh yeah, were they good? What was the food like?
Toilets were quite clean.
What were the screaming kids like though?
They're right. There's some guy on his phone at some point. He really annoyed me until I realised it was me.
I had a thing in the cinema last week where the people directly behind me were chatting all through the trailers. And even though that's sort of okay, it made me really on edge that they were going to talk during the
movie
as well.
We're just trailer chatters. Yeah. You can't enjoy the trailers. You find yourself getting annoyed.
But I'm annoyed in advance that they might chat through the film and I might have to ask them to shut up and that'll start a fight and someone will die. And I've got my head is going through all of this sort of nonsense whilst I'm just getting tenser and tenser. Yeah. It's not cool.
When I went to watch, I can't remember what film it was recently... If that starts on holidays, what did I go and see a few weeks ago? I can't remember. And there were kids there shouting, talking way through, and someone told to shut up. I was tempted to go and shine the torch of my phone in their face, really sinisterly, the kids, and just say shut.
You're right. I think kids would talk back if you said anything to them, but just freaking them out, something they'd never seen, would just shut them up.
And then afterwards, I was outside, this is the Muswell Hill Odeon, and there were some kids, and they were only about like 12 years old. And one, I'm in this prank show that has been on. It's over now. And my career's over. called Impractical Jokers, and he recognised me, and he came and had his photo taken. I said, "Which one was the one that was noisy?" And the one that was noisy came over, said, "Can I have a photo?" I went, "No."
And did you tell him why?
I said, "No, you're too noisy in the film. You're really annoying," and walked off.
Victory.
So there is some justice.
There is some justice.
Anyway, I saw Joe. So I tell you what happens in it.
Yeah, what is Joe?
Well, it's like an independent sort of film. I think it's independent. A budget of $4 million. Nicolas Cage plays this guy who's in this weird small town where he runs a company where they poison trees so the logging company can say they're ill when they cut them down. So anyway, it's a minor sort of role. It's like a real Backville hick town where he gets in trouble with the law and everyone knows each other, and he goes and visits the brothel, and he's got a dog that goes and scares off the neighbours, and
he's a wrong'un basically.
Well, no, he's not. He's actually got, that's normal. He's right. A good'un in a wrong'un town.
Okay.
And meanwhile, there's this boy, like 15-year-old boy, whose dad's an alcoholic who beats him up and takes his money, and his mum's just sort of a drunk who lives in a shack somewhere, and he gets a job with Nicolas Cage.
Which one of them's called Joe?
Joe is Nicolas Cage's character. The young kid who is called Gary, as I mean, he's played by Ty Sheridan, who is a very promising young actor who is putting a great performance. It's just a more of a character-led piece, really. It's just about sort of friendship it feels a bit all over the place, like they've just shot Nicolas Cage just doing some really good acting, and some scenes, it feels like as though it's a fly on the wall documentary about a life rather than a coherent story. And there's another guy in the village who Nicolas Cage has a fight with, and their reaction when they have fights is to try and shoot each other or be really violent. It's a really violent backward town which has different laws, where if you get into a fight with a policeman, doesn't mean you necessarily get arrested, because that's the way people do things back there. And Nicolas Cage has got a drink problem. Everyone seems to have a drink problem there. So it's sort of a grim, it feels like Winter's Bone in place. Have you seen Winter's Bone?
I haven't.
It feels like a more summary
version,
like
Prisoners,
of Winter's Bone.
Almost.
Not, it's more backward than Prisoners.
Okay.
It's a real sort of trailer trashy type town.
Did you ever see what was it called? It was called Outback, but it also had another name. But that Donald Pleasance Australian film.
The one we watched together?
Yeah. With the kangaroo hunting scene.
Yeah,
Waking Fright.
Yes, similar thing to that. Maybe not. I think it's the colour palette of Waking Fright, which is like this classic sort of 60s or 70s Australian sort of outback drama.
Yeah, yeah.
Was so orange, you can't mistake for anything else.
Yeah.
It does feel a bit like that.
But in terms of the town, the sort of setting, that,
yeah,
that sort
everyone
of
getting drunk.
Inescapable kind of thing.
Yes, it does feel a bit inescapable and grim, and there's no real hope, and it operates on a different value system to normal towns. It's so ingrained in there.
I like films like that, because that stuff does still genuinely scare me. You know, I think it's unreasonable people are actually one of the scariest things you can put in a film, far scarier than a big old monster or something.
It's not totally unreasonable. I mean, if you've been worried about Nicolas Cage, which he has made a succession of weirder and weirder films in which he looks weirder, his haircuts have got weirder.
And his haircut's been weird for 30 years, so
This is odd, because he seems to return back to normal.
Oh.
It's Nicolas Cage leaving Las Vegas, sort of acting. You know, when he's great, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And this reminds you, and everyone says this is like his return to form, which it is. It's just him being a brilliant actor, looking normal for a start, which makes you wonder why he had all those weird haircuts before, and just stealing the scene and not having to. I mean, he's at his best when he stops like doing the weird stuff.
Yeah,
when he tones it down, you realise actually you're as good as anyone out there at doing in those sort of, you know, those lost eyes. And
when sort of people who are comfortable being crazy do normal, there is something engaging about their face nonetheless. Like when Robin Williams did it, you know, in Good Morning Vietnam or in 1 Hour Photo or Insomnia, he plays a really good, straight, creepy man because there's so much mania going on inside, I guess. That's interesting. Well, Nicolas Cage seems to do any film going at the moment because he's in crippling debt. But,
yeah, I think this is sort of put back as a... It shows how great he is. He might get an award for this as one of those sort of trendy, cool films. In terms of the plot itself, it doesn't really seem to be a really structure. There's no sort of real twists and turns. It's just a friendship and then Nicholas Romo becoming a role model in a boy's life, which is going wrong. Nothing really happens. It's more of great scenes and great acting.
Okay.
I didn't especially enjoy it. I didn't find it really held my interest. But for a low budget film, which is for $4 million to get Nicolas Cage, it didn't feel like it was watching. Which $4 million is a really low budget film these days. It was really impressive. Would I watch it again? Probably not. Six Marics.
Okay, but it is above.
It's a good slice of a slice of a life.
Okay.
A slice of a bleak life that we are all steadily heading towards.
I do like this simultaneous releasing thing for lower budget films. I think it's probably really good, because they're never going to compete with the likes of Guardians of the Galaxy or any of these things that have huge publicity budgets.
I think it makes sense. It really makes sense.
Yeah, so they can, you know, all of their hype can be done in one go with a small budget, and then people can see it however they like. I really like it.
I wonder if the distributors, they must take a cut of their online sales as well, then, because they're pushing it. Because they're pushing it at the cinema, there must be some joint distribution thing, because
Well, they'll be making deals and things with Blinkbox and iTunes and stuff to have banners and place it prominently in their menus and stuff as well. So I'm sure, yes, they are.
I read an article saying how a lot of the big film distributors can be put off by you making deals before you go to them. So you've got to do nothing with your film and almost have it untouched, or no links or no business deals.
But that's so hard to do to get your budget in the first place. I mean, yeah, my experience, I haven't worked in films enough to know, to, you know, have first-hand experience, but certainly in television and kids' TV even more so, that to get the budget you need the deals in terms of the toys and the colouring books and everything already in place before it's even been written, you know.
If anyone's got any articles on distribution and how it works, I am fascinated. Please email them in, which you can do via the email.
Which is dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or if you want to talk to each other, shout at each other about what film is the best, then you can do so on our Facebook wall, which is /filmfandango. Or you can tweet us with your short thoughts at Film Fandango, or personally at Mr. David Reed or at Marek Larwood.
Super duper. And also, we do this podcast for free, so any donations are really, really gratefully accepted. Thank you to everyone who donated so far. You can go to filmfandango.co.uk and just donate there, and it really helps pay for the podcast and all the other bits and bobs. Or you can buy a t-shirt at Redbubble. Film Fandango, Redbubble.
Stick Film Fandango into Redbubble and you can buy t-shirts and hoodies and tote bags and pillows and whatever.
You can get duvet covers now.
You can get duvet covers. That's weird, isn't it? Hopefully we'll be putting some new designs on there soon for people who don't want the garish logo on there. But yes, we get a tiny, tiny percentage of those, but every little helps. So,
we're going to talk about a whole selection of films we've seen in general, aren't we?
Yes, because the cinema's been a bit...
Well, should I talk about The In-Betweeners too?
Oh, yes, go on then.
Did you see the first one? Yes.
I didn't, because I'm not a big fan of the show itself. But, okay. How was the first one before you talked about the
good.
Sequel?
I enjoyed the first one. I mean, I'm in a situation where I was in the second film, my bit got cut out.
Oh.
So I had like a couple of lines and they redid the ending. I think I'm going to say that.
You're the big dark lighter of the In-Betweeners.
That would have been my second film thing. So I went to a screening of it. And it is, and I think well done to Ian Morris and Damien Beasley, the writers. It's properly funny.
Great.
It's a really laugh out loud funny film. If you don't know, there's been a TV series which was dead, about three series over here. It's probably the biggest thing in the
recent years.
Yeah. Sort of like a funny grain shield about four kids going through school.
Who must all be about in their early 30s now.
I think late 20s.
You think?
But they're. What is really interesting at the in between these two, they've established the characters are so established so well early on. From a script writing perspective, you go, here are your...
It's American in its actual thoroughness.
You've got the clever guy, the stupid guy, the sort of Jack the Lad guy, and the sort of normal...
The cursed romantic, really, is the other one.
And they're all set up, so you've got the whole range of jokes. And there's some... and obviously, some, if you don't know, it is quite puerile, and it is you know, teenagers will love it more. But I think my parents wouldn't like it.
No, mine wouldn't.
But there's some... classic scenes where they properly go keep on pushing it to the funny. So it is like if you go out to a comedy, you laugh out loud, you know, 15, 20 times, that's a good comedy. So I recommend The In-Betweeners 2 for a puerile, good, feel good comedy.
And is that in cinemas at the moment? Because I've seen it on buses.
It's in cinemas at the moment. So hopefully. There'll be British revitalised British comedy.
You in the credits, even though you were cut?
I don't know.
Because a friend of mine was not really in Prometheus, but she was still in the credits.
Let me just look myself up on IMDb and see if I'm currently in the credits. It's very exciting for everyone.
Oh,
what's
drum roll!
Happening? No. Oh. Okay. Who likes reading?
Who likes reading? Well, we all like reading, surely. But me. Are you getting at that? Is it me?
Yeah.
Is that what? Yeah, it's me. Okay. Well, we have an email here. It's only Martin Appleyard.
I love Martin Appleyard.
Yeah. What accent does Martin Appleyard have?
Appleyard, like the American surname for orchard, isn't it?
Appleyard.
Yeah.
Okay. Dear Marek David and Chris Webb.
Chris Webb is our...
is our dog.
He's one of our regular listeners who contributes, but he's been a bit quiet lately.
Has been a bit quiet. I hope he's not dying.
He listens to other podcasts and he gets a bit smug about stuff, I mean.
He's Marek's nemesis. I think he's all right. Six Davids. If read out, can I please have it in a retro, okay, yuppie voice from the 90s? Oh, okay, that's what I'm doing. Okay.
Go for it.
Okay, yep. As the Hollywood gravy train keeps churning out the same superhero movie every couple of months with the same plot and no original ideas, just a different costume, I, like many others, am now more likely to select a foreign film to watch because I feel I am more likely to see something more creative and original. Okay? Yep. With this in mind, my question is, which country do you feel is currently producing the most creative and interesting film ideas? I predict Merrick will say France, blue is the warmest colour, and David will go for the Far East, maybe Indonesia, the raid. I would put a vote in for the Scandinavian countries such as Norway. I think Troll Hunter, for example, was a brilliantly original film. Thanks for the entertainment. I'll keep watching the films. And that's from Martin Appleyard.
Nice one. He sounds like he's actually listened to more than one of our podcasts.
He does. And he was trying to prove it as well with his references.
Very good back reference there,
yeah.
Martin.
Tricky. I personally, cards on the table, don't think I've seen a broad enough scope of international films in order to say this is the territory that's really exciting me at the moment. You know, it would probably just be individual films. But I, you know, the trend of Scandinavian stuff being exported over here, I think, is quite exciting. But it has been mostly television. I think.
But things like Headhunters.
Headhunters was fantastic, and Trollhunter as well. All the Hunter films.
Well, that's my new thing.
Hunter films.
I said to you, like I said before, all films with blue are
yes.
Now, any film with the word hunt in it is good. Here's my new theory.
Okay, let's test that.
So I've got, well, here's ones I've watched recently.
Okay.
I recently watched one on Netflix, which I quite like. It's like a TV movie called The Hunted.
Yeah.
Which was, this is very good. On Netflix, it's about this guy who, a detective, returns to his old village, and all these elk start getting killed. I really enjoyed that. There was
The Hunt, Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen Hunt.
Really good film.
And even better, The Hunter with Willem Dafoe, but him trying to find...
That was good. That was good. The an almost extinct...
Yeah,
Tiger
and
thing.
Also there is Troll Hunter and Headhunters.
Hunt for Red October.
Yes.
Is a good film. There's got to be something, some terrible Witch Hunter film.
I like Witch Hunter, the original Witch
I've
Hunter.
I've not seen Witch Hunter. I didn't mean that specific film. But
I'm just putting in Hunt to...
Snow White and the Huntsman. Not seen
that's
it.
That's not really the Huntsman's... I don't know if it's got to be Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters is not strong.
But Hunt is genuinely...
Okay, just the word Hunt is what... Is that your theory? That's your new theory.
Blue or Hunt?
What about Blue Hunt? Is Blue Hunt any good?
That sounds a bit like someone...
I would say Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters is counted in your theory and is not a strong film.
I've just looked up put Hunt into IMDb.
Yeah.
And there's one film I really want to see. It came out in 2008. Pig Hunt.
Pig Hunt?
It's horror. It's got 4.8. When John takes his San Francisco friends to his deceased uncle's remote ranch to hunt wild pigs. It seems like a typical weekend. Guys, weekend.
Yeah, typical weekend.
No, hang on. I read that wrong. Which is a description of IMDb. When John takes his San Francisco friends to his deceased uncle's remote ranch to hunt wild pigs, it seems like a typical guy's weekend with guns.
Yeah, typical. We've all had them.
Despite the presence of John's sexy girlfriend, Brooks. But as John and his crew trek deep into the forest, they begin tracking the awful truth about his uncle's demise and legend of the Ripper, a murderous 3,000-pound black boar. I want to see... Has anyone seen Pig Hunt? I want to know... I wonder if it's really 4.8.
Pig Hunt. Sounds good, doesn't it?
And the budget was 6 million.
That's a big budget for a pig movie.
Big,
I think that's probably the biggest pig movie.
Call it Big Pig Hunt. Big Pig Hunt, they should have called it.
What, name a bigger pig movie. I can't think of any. I think Pig Hunt is the biggest pig movie there's ever been.
Well, there's lots of questions that have come out of that. But we've sort of gone away from
Martin's question.
Which country? Well, I think the problem is, here's my synopsis of the whole thing, it's probably wrong. Because America dominates the film releases, the mainstream releases,
yes.
in order for someone to compete with them, you have to produce something a bit different.
Mm.
And I'd say France has produced the most interesting films, but I think it always has done that. It's not necessarily been it's not a new thing.
And it's hard to know because they will be producing films for their own market that we will never see.
Yeah.
That might be mediocre to terrible. But it's only the ones that really break out. People go, "Oh, that is special that they bother putting money behind to export to English-speaking countries."
And there are some great indie American films at the moment. Like Blue Ruin.
Yeah.
Which I can bang on about as well.
I will watch it.
Brilliant. And last year we talked about Safety Not Guaranteed, the time travelling one,
yeah,
which is another low budget film we liked.
What's the British film industry like at the moment? There's the question. Have you seen many British films? I know a lot of basically American financed films are filming over here. Ever since Harry Potter, we've actually had we've got an enormous number of talented CGI people over here. So a lot of the big budget films are now shooting over here. Weirdly, Guardians of the Galaxy, huge sprawling, you've probably seen the trailers, I know you've not seen the film, but we talked about it last week, shot at Shepperton.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's tax breaks, isn't there?
Star Wars is being filmed over here. It's huge, but in terms of actually British films being made...
There was that horror period, wasn't there? There's a few horror films. Remember, like Eden Lake came out about 5 or 6 years ago.
Hammer Studios started up again with the Woman in Black, didn't they, with Daniel Radcliffe in it. And, yeah, I want to see more from us. I want to see more than just Welcome to the Punch.
And Richard Curtis is...
well, he's done, isn't he? He's retired, isn't he? I think.
Bye!
Bye, Richard.
So I think that's it. We everywhere probably doesn't. It's what we get to see and how we get to... I'm going to the Isle of Wight Film Festival.
Oh, yeah?
Well, we'll be going when this is out, so I'll try and see some stuff there.
So we can talk about that next week?
Yeah, I'm only probably going for one day.
Okay, well, we can talk about you travelling there.
Yeah, and I'll talk about coming back as well. I do make it back.
Well, we might make it two-parter, depending on how much there is to talk about. We'll talk about coming back the week after.
It sounds magical. I've got another letter.
Oh, yeah? Who's it from?
It is from Christine at Short Film Sunday.
Oh, yes.
Which is a good website for looking at short films. And also, we post occasionally some short films on our Facebook page. There's a good one I posted, this really violent British film that came out called Soft.
Great.
A few years ago, which you can see on our Facebook page. I thought was really quite traumatic.
If anyone else has found a short film they thought was good and wants to post it on our Facebook page, please feel free. It shouldn't just be for us to post things on. Am I reading this as well? Is it not your turn?
I don't like reading so much.
Do you not? Okay. Right, what voice am I doing it in?
Do it in my voice.
You don't want that. It's quite a long email. We want the listeners to understand.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Right, what was I doing before I changed to English with the previous one? American. I'll go there. Hope you're all well there. I keep starting emails and not sending them. Came across this early chaplain the other day and thought I'd pass it on. It's public domain, so okay to share. From his early work with Mark Sennett, one of the last before the Tramp character emerged. Well worth a look for sure. We should post that to the Facebook page.
Yep.
Also, with your request for old film, one of my all-time fave films ever is from 1946, William Wyler's Best Years of Our Lives. It'll either be newish to you, or I'm about to overshare. But so good, It tends to be remembered for Harold Russell being the only person to ever win two Oscars for the same role. And he's great, but there's so much more. Post-World War II America and vets returning home to see how it's changed. It's pretty brave in not being super jingoistic flag-waving. There's a great bit with Hoagie Carmichael, if that's his name, but I don't want it to spoil it. There's some good techie details in this. There's another link. Like the naturalistic approach and deep focus photography. Tons of notable casts and crew. Cinematographer Greg Tolan. I'm particularly partial to Dana Andrews, and Myrna Loh is pretty fantastic. It's got a bit of melodrama, but on the whole, ages pretty well. Genuinely in my all-time top five, for sure. Okay, so the Best Years of Our Lives, is that what was it called? The Best Years of Our Lives is what we're talking about here. Anywho, there we are. I have another email I started earlier in the summer with some info about public domain, etc., and some places for legal watching. I'll clean it up a bit and get it out to you. It does ramble a bit. I know, shocker, that. That'd be great if we can find places to watch free movies. Please do pass them on. Best you all at the Fringe. If a wee curly-haired lady named Abigail approaches you and talks about Comedy Biscuit, I do actually know her, okay? I've been and gone. I did not meet her. Still enjoy the podcast heaps every single week, trying to think of a good casting challenge for you. Keep well. Let me know if you hear any good shorts. Doing students all of September, but I've got loads of spots open otherwise. Tar Christine. Yes, Christine follows us on Twitter with Short Film Sunday. Is that right?
Yeah.
Short Film Sunday. So if you would like her to pass on your short films to other people, then do let her know. Thank you for your email, Christine, and we will have a look at Best Years of Our Lives. If it's in your top five, that's pretty cool.
What are you going to talk about something else you've seen?
Well, I've not managed to get to the cinema this week. There was nothing that caught my eye. As I say, the in-betweeners isn't really my cup of tea. But so I made the terrible mistake of watching something on Netflix instead.
Netflix! I always shout Netflix like that every time I see it.
Why is that?
Netflix! It's really fun.
Yeah. I watched the remake of Carrie.
With, what's her name?
With, Chloe Grace Moretz. And Julianne Moore's in it as well. The lovely Gabriella Wilde, who I interviewed for Three Musketeers back in the day.
Julianne Moore is always good though, right?
She's great. The thing I have to admit here, and it is a shameful thing, is I have not seen the original Carrie. And so this was probably just like watching a big spoiler, really. It's a famous enough film that I probably, if pushed, could have told you everything that happens in the original Carrie anyway.
That's such a shame.
It's not a trend yet because it's only two. I also haven't seen the original Psycho.
What?
But I have seen the remake of Psycho.
They're two brilliant films. Wasted them.
I wasn't a fan of the horror genre when I was younger, there's a lot of gaps in my
book. Psycho's a thriller.
Yeah.
Psycho's incredible.
Yeah. I've seen it shot for shot, but with Vince Vaughn and Anne Hesh in it now.
Vince
Vaughn. I know. But this remake of Carrie is not strong at all. It basically, I know the period that the original Carrie comes from, and I know how celebrated it is, so I can sort of guess by watching this what it is probably doing worse than the original, which is there is no subtle build-up of a girl having a troubled time at school. She pretty much scene two, you are told she has telekinetic powers, and it's a bit post Harry Pottery witch coming to terms with her abilities.
In the original, I mean, Sissy Spacek is incredible.
Yes,
because she's got that. She looks frail, and yet can look terrifying, almost alienly terrifying.
I've seen the photos of that, and I think that's exactly what the character needs. She needs to look like somebody who would get really bullied at school. Like somebody who's strange and insular, and
all right, mate.
Chloe Grace Moretz isn't that. Yeah. Like, she was brilliant as Hit Girl, but she is quite pretty. Like you, and she's got good hair. And you don't, I don't believe that she isn't part of the in crowd at
maybe
these
she stinks or something.
Maybe that's it.
If she they say, "Oh, you really," that's it's...
well, no one mentions it if she does. Actually, no, they say Carrie eats shit all the time, so maybe she's got stinky
that
breath.
That would lead to it. Yeah,
yeah, but it's. It's not a subtly done film. It's like all of these remakes. I saw the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, and identical in terms of this is just an idiot remaking a film they used to love. That's basically it.
I don't understand the Carrie remake because I think it, especially when they get the casting, when the casting's so, it's almost an insult to Sissy Spacek that you think you can get someone to play that. That's the role she's famous.
Well, it's,
really
it's
famous.
What didn't work in this film, and I found it really interesting, was at no point did I believe that this young girl I saw was a product of this weird, overbearing mother. She seemed like she'd been brought up by a completely normal family and had now just been plonked with this woman for a bit. Because she seemed, you know, self-confident, you know, could talk back to her mum no problem without seeming like her world might collapse at any point. You know, it didn't really make sense. Julianne Moore was doing a brilliant job as this sort of hyper-religious, guilt-ridden sort of monster in her own right.
But she's got that ghostly look to it. Julianne Moore
haunted
has...
haunted look to
yeah,
it, yeah.
She's got gaunt. That. Yeah, she's got that sort of otherworldly thing yeah. which it needs to be.
Yeah, it's... I didn't believe it, and I think that's the storytelling and everything was just, you know, popcorn, overly glossy, over... It's got the... They all have that music video look to them these days.
Yeah.
You know, where when the... it's spoilers, but anyone who doesn't know the famous scene from Carrie... you should turn off now. When she gets blood poured on her at prom... It's poured so perfectly, like it's sort of in a Beyonce video or something.
Okay.
So she looks amazing in it for the rest of what she's doing. And she turns into a sort of witch. Like, rather than she is... rather than she's a high school girl who has been broken emotionally and the telekinesis is just a manifestation of her hurt, she turns into Evil Willow from Buffy, who
okay.
is just sort of... it's really pony.
What I think, or another point, I think, is that the naivety of, even when we were younger, the youth don't have that same naivety at an early age. So, like,
yeah.
these 17, 18-year-olds, the proms, you know,
yeah.
they don't have that... That innocence isn't there because of the internet, because of the communication, because
well,
of the
well, they've added
they
the internet into this because to make it more up-to-date. So, with the bullying of Carrie that happens at the beginning of the film... is now put on YouTube to add to her humiliation and stuff. But you're right, it makes it all the more... This isn't an insular, isolated community where you can really destroy
and
somebody.
And Carrie does feel into an isolated. And she, obviously, because it's all linked in with her going through her period and
yes.
becoming a woman.
Yes.
And also, that sort of... I remember back then, you would have that... You know, about sex wasn't the material to get hold
yes.
of to find out about it. More, if your parents didn't tell you about it...
Yeah.
It would seem like an alien, which seems crazy now. Like, kids would go on the internet and go, what is this, what is that, and
yeah.
find out. But then there was no... How would you find out?
Well, exactly. It's supposed to be... You know, it's this... It's because it's suggesting she's been homeschooled until recently. So she's supposed to be completely
oh, okay.
alien and other. And Chloe Grace Moretz doesn't come across as that. Like, what I found strange was, I think if somebody had been brought up in a really sort of disciplined and strange household, they would have an odd sort of maturity. Not a literal maturity, but something in the eyes and the posture that wasn't like kids. You know, wouldn't have that playfulness that kids have. And Chloe Grace Moretz is only now 17, and this film came out a year ago or so. And the other actresses who play her schoolmates are all in their mid-20s. So she is considerably younger and has less life experience to bring to this crippled character, you know, than the other people do that she's acting next to. So it's a very odd choice. I mean, I think she's fantastic as Hit Girl, and I think she's too young to be portraying these sort of figures at the moment. She doesn't have the life experience to be that interesting yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh dear.
It's nothing against her. It's just her age. That's all I'm saying. You know, she may well, you know, pull it out of the bag. I just since Hit Girl, I haven't seen her do anything else particularly fun. Like she was in Dark Shadows, which I absolutely hate. So that doesn't help. But
yeah. Well, the moral of the story is never, ever, ever go and watch a remake before you watch the original.
Well, I now feel if one more happens, then I'm just going to have to collect them. As sort
you have
of thing.
To watch Psycho and Carrie.
Yeah, I know, I do. Have you seen the TV version of The Shining that Stephen King prefers to the Kubrick one?
Oh, I think I saw a tiny bit of
it's
it.
It's terrible. Terrible.
I follow Stephen King on Twitter.
How
really
is he?
Put me off him.
Really?
I started reading one of his books, his latest book, Mr. Mercedes or something. It's terrible. I stopped reading it.
I've never read one of his books, but I'm people
he's very
say
erratic.
They're
some
very
of them
good.
Are brilliant and some of them are awful.
Actually, no, I read one of his, I was going to say James Barkman, but that's not it. Richard Barkman.
Oh, The Running Man.
Book. I've read The Running Man, yeah.
Yeah, The Long Walk's a really good one. Anyway, that's books. It's not about books. Well, that's about our time, isn't it? I think we've done.
Yeah, yeah.
So, hey guys, keep watching the films.
And you stay safe, yeah? Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.